Welcome to another deep dive today. Today's topic is something that I think affects all of us every day, and that is consumer protection. We've got some fascinating discussion from the 80s with Milton Friedman from his Free to Choose series. And so we're going to be looking at, arguments for and against consumer protection measures. So buckle up, because we're going to challenge some assumptions about, how the marketplace works. And ultimately, this is all about getting you to think and act locally.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how, we often just take consumer protection as a given.
Yeah.
But the debate about its effectiveness and whether it's necessary is much more complex than you might initially think.
Absolutely. And to kick things off, let's rewind back to the 1960s.
Okay.
A time when consumer activism was really starting to gain momentum.
Yeah.
The Chevrolet Corvair, which is infamous for its handling issues, thanks to Ralph Nader.
Right.
That really ignited the conversation about consumer safety.
You're right. The Corvair became a symbol of consumer vulnerability. And, this led to a whole wave of new government agencies like the Consumer Product Safety Commission, the CPSC. The goal was to protect consumers from potentially unsafe products, but this also resulted in a massive expansion of regulations.
So I'm curious about the scale of this expansion. What does it actually look like in terms of rules and regulations?
Well, imagine this. In 1977, the Federal Register, which is essentially a record of all these regulations, had a single day with over 1,754 pages worth of rules.
Wow.
And this incredible growth obviously raises some fundamental questions. Is this level of regulation truly necessary? Is it even effective?
1,754 pages, that's overwhelming. It really makes you wonder about the efficiency and the potential drawbacks of such a massive regulatory system. But let's kind of shift gears a little bit and dive into Milton Friedman's perspective. He's known for his strong advocacy for free markets.
Yeah, and Friedman argues that the free market itself, driven by competition and the self-interest of both businesses and consumers, is the most effective protector of consumer interests. Think about it, Companies are naturally incentivized to produce high-quality products to offer competitive prices because they want to attract and retain customers.
That makes sense. In a competitive market, companies can't afford to alienate customers with shoddy products or unreasonable prices. They'll just lose business to their rivals.
Exactly. And Friedman uses a really compelling example to illustrate this point, the evolution of calculators. Within just a few decades, calculators went from being these expensive, bulky machines to the affordable, pocket-sized devices we have today. This remarkable progress, fueled by competition and innovation, occurred with minimal government involvement.
So we see the free market in action, leading to better products at lower prices. But are there instances where government regulation is still necessary?
That's the core of the debate. And Friedman explores this by examining the history of railroad regulation. It all began with consumer complaints about high prices, which led to the establishment of the Interstate Commerce Commission, the ICC, back in 1887. And the ICC was supposed to protect consumers from price gouging.
So another case of a government agency created with good intentions,
right?
To protect consumers.
Yes, but here's where it gets really interesting. The story takes a turn. Instead of safeguarding consumers, the ICC ended up being influenced by the very industry it was meant to regulate. It became a tool for the railroad companies to stifle competition and keep prices high, ultimately hurting the consumer that it was designed to protect.
That's a remarkable twist. It seems like a classic example of how well-intentioned government intervention can sometimes backfire and lead to unintended consequences. Are there any modern-day examples that kind of illustrate this point?
Absolutely. Friedman discusses the case of Dayton Air Freight, a company whose growth was hampered by ICC regulations that prevented them from expanding their service routes. And this restriction on competition ultimately led to higher prices for consumers.
Dayton Air Freight is a perfect example of how outdated or overly burdensome regulations can stifle innovation and ultimately harm consumers.
Yeah.
It's a reminder that the impact of these regulations is not just theoretical, It plays out in the real world with real consequences for businesses and individuals.
Precisely. And this brings us to another really complex area where the debate about consumer protection is particularly heated. And that's the world of pharmaceuticals and the role of the Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA.
Yeah, the FDA is responsible for ensuring the safety and effectiveness of drugs, which is, undeniably a crucial role. And I've also heard criticisms that the FDA can be too slow and too cautious, potentially delaying the availability of treatments that could actually save lives.
Yeah, it's a delicate balancing act. Yeah. On the one hand, the FDA has undoubtedly saved lives by preventing the marketing of dangerous drugs. You know, the thalidomide tragedy where a drug caused severe birth defects is a stark reminder of the importance of stringent safety regulations. But on the other hand, critics argue that these regulations, while well-intentioned, can also create significant delays in the approval process, costing precious time for patients who could benefit from these new medications.
So I can see both sides of the argument here. It's crucial to have safeguards in place.
Right.
But the potential for bureaucratic hurdles to delay access to life-saving treatments is also a very valid concern. So how do we find the right balance?
And to illustrate this dilemma, Friedman highlights the story of Mrs. Esther Usdane, who suffered from severe asthma. Her doctor wanted to prescribe a specific medication that had been proven effective in other countries, but it was prohibited by the FDA here in the United States.
So it must have been incredibly frustrating for her to be denied access to a treatment that could have potentially, you know, improved her quality of life.
Absolutely. Mrs. Usdane's only option was to travel to Canada, where the medication was readily available. This experience highlights the very real impact of these regulations and raises tough questions about accessibility and patient autonomy.
So her story really puts a human face on this very complex issue, and it underscores the need for a system that is both safe and responsive to the needs of the patients.
Right. And Friedman argues that the FDA's structure incentivizes risk aversion. The agency is naturally more concerned with avoiding the approval of a potentially harmful drug than with potentially delaying a beneficial one.
So are you suggesting that the FDA's focus on preventing harm could sometimes come at the cost of, you know, missing opportunities to actually help people?
That's the argument that Friedman puts forward, and it raises a very difficult question. Is it worth sacrificing potentially beneficial drugs in the pursuit of absolute safety? It's a complex ethical dilemma with no easy answers.
Yeah, it's a thought-provoking point for sure. It seems like we're constantly grappling with this tension, you know, between safety and access, between individual freedom and collective well-being.
Precisely. And to further challenge our assumptions about the effectiveness of regulation, Friedman draws a really interesting parallel between current drug regulations and the era of prohibition.
Prohibition.
Yes.
As in the ban on alcohol.
Exactly.
I'm intrigued. What's the connection?
Well, Friedman argues that prohibition, while well-intentioned, ultimately failed to achieve its goal of eliminating alcohol consumption. Instead, it created this dangerous black market, empowered criminal organizations, and put consumers at even greater risk. Similarly, he suggests that excessive regulation in other areas, such as pharmaceuticals, could lead to similar unintended consequences, driving people to seek out alternative solutions in potentially unsafe ways.
That's a thought-provoking analogy. It suggests that simply banning or restricting access to something that people want, whether it's alcohol or medication, doesn't necessarily solve the problem. It might even exacerbate it by pushing it underground and making it less safe.
Exactly. And to bring this full circle, Friedman revisits the Corvair case. Years after the initial outcry and the implementation of all these safety regulations, the government conducted its own safety tests and found that the Corvair was comparable in safety to other vehicles of its time.
So the car that sparked the whole consumer safety movement wasn't actually any worse than its counterparts?
It is indeed.
That's surprising.
It is. And this finding raises questions about the validity of the initial fears surrounding the Corvair and the cascading effects that those fears had on regulations.
So it seems like Friedman is making a really compelling case against excessive government intervention in the marketplace. But, you know, what about the arguments in favor of consumer protection? Surely there are people who believe that regulations are essential to protect consumers from harm and ensure a fair marketplace, right?
Absolutely. And the Free to Choose episode does feature perspectives from consumer advocates who present counterarguments to Friedman's ideas. They raise valid concerns about the potential for industry influence, the importance of independent, government-backed testing, and the need to protect consumers from making uninformed or potentially dangerous choices, especially when dealing with complex products or potential long-term health risks.
This is such a fascinating discussion, and it's clear that there are valid points on both sides of the debate.
Right.
It seems like finding the right balance is key.
You've hit the nail on the head. And it's a balance that we as consumers and citizens need to actively engage in shaping.
Yeah.
It's not just about accepting the status quo. It's about critically evaluating the effectiveness of existing regulations, advocating for improvements where necessary, and supporting businesses that prioritize consumer well-being.
I love that you're bringing it back to personal action and responsibility. It's a great segue to the Think and Act Locally theme of this deep dive. Stay tuned for part two, where we'll explore how these ideas translate to our everyday lives and how we can make a difference right here in our own communities.
Welcome back. We've been kind of unpacking the complexities of consumer protection, you know, from the rise of government agencies to the arguments for and against regulation. But now it's time to shift our focus a little bit and bring this conversation closer to home.
Yeah, I'm really excited to dive into the Think and Act Locally aspect of this whole topic. It's about connecting these, you know, big ideas to our everyday lives and realizing that we actually have the power to shape the marketplace right here in our own communities.
Exactly. So we've talked about national level regulations and these historical examples, but now let's zoom in and consider your own community. As we go through this, I invite you to ask yourself, are there any industries where you feel there's either too much or too little regulation? Think about the businesses you interact with regularly. Restaurants, auto repair shops, grocery stores, daycare centers, the list goes on and on. Have you ever encountered a situation where you felt a business wasn't being held accountable? Or maybe you've seen a local business struggle due to what seemed like, you know, unnecessary red tape?
Yeah, those are great questions to kind of get us thinking critically about our own experiences as consumers. I think it's easy to get caught up in the abstract debates, but when we start reflecting on our own communities, yeah, things become much more real.
Absolutely. And by identifying these specific areas where you feel things could be improved, you can start to pinpoint where you might want to act locally.
So let's say, for example, you've noticed a pattern of questionable food safety practices in a few restaurants in your town. Maybe you've heard complaints from friends and neighbors, or maybe you've even experienced it firsthand.
Right.
What can you do?
Well, in that scenario, knowledge is your first line of action. Look into your local health codes and regulations. Find out how restaurants are inspected, what options you have if you encounter a problem. You can usually find this information online through your city or county health department's website.
Yeah, and don't underestimate the power of direct communication. You can contact your local health department, your city council, to voice your concerns, advocate for stricter enforcement or clearer guidelines. Mm-hmm. Remember, local officials are often much more accessible than those at the national level.
Right.
They rely on feedback from their constituent to understand the issues affecting their communities.
Exactly. Your voice truly matters at the local level. Another way to kind of think and act locally is by consciously supporting businesses that demonstrate a commitment to consumer well-being. Huh. And this doesn't require, you know, grand gestures. It can be as simple as choosing to shop at stores that are known for fair pricing, quality products, ethical business practices.
Yeah, it's about being a conscious consumer and aligning your spending with your values. Look for companies that are transparent about their sourcing, offer clear return policies, prioritize excellent customer service. These are all indicators that a company values its customers and strives to treat them fairly.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's about voting with your wallet. By supporting businesses that align with your values, you're sending a really powerful message about the kind of marketplace you want to see.
Right.
And don't underestimate the power of sharing your positive experiences, too. Tell your friends, your family, your neighbors about businesses that you trust and admire. Write positive online reviews, share your experiences on social media, and help those businesses thrive.
It's word of mouth marketing at its finest.
Yeah.
We can all amplify the impact of businesses that are doing things right.
Exactly. And here's another thought. Think and act locally can also mean supporting your local consumer advocacy groups.
Oh, yeah.
These organizations work tirelessly to educate consumers about their rights, investigate complaints, and advocate for stronger consumer protections. Many cities and states have nonprofit organizations that are specifically dedicated to consumer advocacy.
That's a fantastic idea. I'm sure there are groups right here in my community that I could, you know, get involved with, volunteer my time, donate to their cause, or just, you know, help spread awareness about the work that they do.
Exactly. Every little bit helps these organizations continue their important work. And remember, knowledge is power. Take some time to learn about consumer protection laws in your area. Understanding your rights is crucial for advocating for yourself and others.
This whole conversation has really opened my eyes to the fact that consumer protection isn't just about reacting to problems. It's about proactively shaping the kind of marketplace we want to participate in. It's about making informed choices, supporting businesses that align with our values, and advocating for policies that protect both consumers and ethical businesses.
Yeah, you summed it up perfectly. It's about moving beyond a defensive mindset of simply guarding against, you know, being cheated or harmed, and embracing a much more proactive role in creating a marketplace that is fair, transparent, and beneficial to everyone involved.
I love that perspective. It's empowering to realize that we have a voice and that we can make a difference. This has been a fantastic discussion so far. We've covered a lot of ground, you know, from the history of consumer protection to its impact on our local communities. Now, in the final part of our deep dive, we'll explore some of the broader philosophical and ethical questions that this whole topic raises. Welcome back to our deep dive. It's been quite a journey exploring the history, the arguments, and even the very real impact this topic has on our lives, you know, as consumers.
Yeah, we've definitely navigated through a lot of complex information. And yeah. I think it's time now to kind of grapple with some of the broader philosophical and ethical questions that this whole topic raises.
You're right. And as we've been discussing, there's this constant tension between individual freedom and collective safety. It seems like with every issue we've touched on, car safety, drug regulation, even something as seemingly simple as, you know, toy gun noise levels, we run into this fundamental question. How much freedom are we willing to give up in the name of safety? And who gets to decide where that line is drawn?
That's the core of the debate, right? I mean, it's a question that has occupied philosophers and policymakers for centuries. On the one hand, we cherish this autonomy to make our own choices, even if those choices come with risks. We value individual liberty and the freedom to navigate the marketplace according to our own preferences and judgment. But on the other hand, we also recognize that there are instances when society does need to step in to protect its members from harm, especially when those harms could have far-reaching consequences for others.
So it's a delicate balance. And as you said earlier, there's no, you know, one-size-fits-all solution.
Yeah.
It seems like finding the right balance requires this nuanced understanding of the potential risks and benefits in each situation.
Absolutely. What might seem like a perfectly reasonable safety measure to one person could feel like an overreach of authority or an infringement on individual liberty to another. Context matters. And the perceived balance between, you know, freedom and safety can vary so much depending on the specific issue that we're talking about.
And to make things even more complicated, we have to factor in things like industry influence, the potential for bureaucratic inefficiencies, and just the ever-present risk of unintended consequences, right?
Yeah.
It's like trying to solve this complex equation with constantly shifting variables.
You hit the nail on the head. It is a multifaceted challenge. And that's precisely why we need to engage in these discussions, to critically examine our own assumptions and to be open to these diverse perspectives. We can't just passively accept these simple answers or blindly trust that others will always make the right choices for us. We have to be informed, engaged, and willing to participate in shaping the kind of world we want to live in.
It all comes back to, you know, being an active participant in our communities,
yeah,
and being mindful of how our choices as consumers can actually influence the marketplace.
Right.
Think and act locally, as we've been saying.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we're not just these passive recipients of goods and services. We have the power to shape the marketplace by making informed choices. We can support businesses that prioritize ethical practices, transparency, consumer well-being. We can advocate for policies that strike a balance between safety and freedom.
You know, what's really resonating with me from this whole deep dive is this idea that consumer protection isn't just about preventing harm or avoiding being cheated.
Right.
It's also about fostering this sense of collective well-being, promoting fairness and transparency in the marketplace, and creating an environment where both businesses and consumers can actually thrive.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. It's about moving beyond a purely defensive posture and embracing this more proactive role in shaping the marketplace. It's about making these conscious choices that align with our values and understanding that those choices have ripple effects.
Every time we make a purchase, we're casting a vote for the kind of world we want to live in.
That's right.
And those votes, collectively, have the power to drive real change, encourage businesses to adopt more ethical practices, inspire others to become more conscious consumers.
We have more power than we often realize. It's inspiring, isn't it?
It is. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I think it's fitting to leave our listeners with a final thought to ponder. In a world of ever-increasing information and complexity, how do we find that sweet spot between individual freedom and collective safety? What role do we each want to play in shaping that balance?
It's a question that doesn't have any easy answers, but it's a question worth asking.
Absolutely.
Keep exploring, keep learning, and most importantly, keep engaging in the ways that are meaningful to you.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the fascinating and often challenging world of consumer protection. Remember, the choices we make as individuals, they do matter. And together, we can create a marketplace that reflects our values and contributes to the well-being of our communities and the world around us.